You are here for foundation assessment. We'll come up to council table. Both sides ready? All right, would you call the case, please?
The court will now call Foundation Assessments Incorporated et al. Versus Susan O'Connor. May it please the court, Mr. Roger Fuller will argue for the appellant. Ms. Elizabeth P. Arnowski will argue for the appellee.
All right.
May it please Roger. May it please the court. Your Honor, we're here on a Section 1, Civil Practice and Remedies Code, Section 150 case. There's a long history behind 150, several rulings out of this court on it, dealing with whether or not, how it is applicable and whether or not it can be waived. In the recent case, 2011 case of Gutierrez, Murphy versus Gutierrez, the court found that it could be waived. That was under the old statute as it existed. I believe it was passed in 2005 and amended by the legislature in 2009. This, I believe, is the first case under the new 2009 statute. In the 2009 amendment, the legislature made several changes that I would argue strengthen the effect of Section 150.002, requiring a certificate of merit. Specifically, they laid out some additional requirements for the affidavit.
How does that affect waiver?
Well, Your Honor, I think that we're looking at the history of 150. Yeah, the legislature, each time they've acted on it, have made it stronger so that it disposes of more of these claims.
Okay. We'll agree with that. Now, what does that have to do with waiver?
Well, Your Honor, plain language of the statute doesn't say anything about waiver. In this case, I don't think there's been waiver because we haven't met the requirements of the Murphy case. Murphy required participation in discovery. The plaintiff has admitted, the appellee has admitted, that I did not affirmatively take any discovery. Did participate in a deposition of the plaintiff, the one and only deposition taken in this case. It was noticed by the co-defendant PermaPeer Foundation. It was done in my office as a professional courtesy. PermaPeer's attorneys are from San Antonio, and I understand plaintiff's counsel did not have a location to take that one deposition. Plaintiffs admitted I did no affirmative discovery other than responding to requests that were sent by the plaintiff.
Well, if I was the devil's advocate and this case had been going on for over 2 years and 2 months before the trial setting, you had done no discovery, again, being the devil's advocate and not saying this is what you were doing, one could argue you had planned to do this. Why else would you have gone 2 years with no discovery?
Well, Your Honor, nobody did any discovery as such. There's only been one deposition taken in the case.
Well, the other side doing discovery has nothing to do with you getting prepared for trial, which is coming up here.
Your Honor,
quick.
I felt like, well, it was already rescheduled to December when this motion was filed. It was rescheduled by agreement from the February, I believe, or April setting.
Okay, so it,
December. Yeah. But to answer your question, I anticipated that at some point she'd furnish me with an affidavit from her experts. To which I could respond with my testimony that it wasn't necessary for me to go out and go to the expense and trouble of noticing depositions of her experts and obtaining those depositions when she would file an affidavit fulfilling the certificate of merit requirement that would give me all of this information anyway at a much easier, less expensive method.
Well, how do you, speaking of that, going down that road just a little bit, how do you address our argument if we read the language of 150.002A in any action or arbitration proceeding for damages arising out of the provision of professional services. And her allegation, as I understand it, is in fact there were no professional services rendered. They never came out here.
Well, in her petition, and of course in her brief, several times she alleges that it is believed that all inspection reports by Chaudhry, my client, related to the home are not based.
Chaudhry.
We just call him SK. Chaudhry or Chaudhry, he pronounces it both ways, related to the home are not based upon any personal inspection of the home by Chaudhry, and thus cannot possibly be believed, and here's, and do not meet the requirements of any reputable engineer performing an assessment and preparing an engineering report related to foundation repairs. She's holding him to his professional standard. In her petition, she said twice here that that he didn't act as a professional would. Therefore, I mean, it seems obvious she's alleging a standard, an engineering standard. She needs to provide evidence under 150 to show where he violated that standard. Had she simply sued him for breach of contract for not providing the report, I think it would be a different, slightly different case. I'd remind the court that her contract, as alleged, is with PermaPier. She does not have a contract
right.
with my client.
Right.
I have a question. Did I understand you to say at the beginning of your argument that you thought she should be required to file a 150 expert report to provide you with information about the
yeah. Yes, at some point.
Well, why didn't you just do a request for disclosure? I mean, that's the purpose. I mean, my understanding of a certificate of merit is the same as the expert report case we just heard argued. It's just to provide the underlying basis of the how the design professional breached the standard of care and let the trial court determine that the claim has merit. It's not really a discovery tool.
Well, PermaPier did a request for disclosure, and I was served with the answers to those. In addition, I mean, Section 150, she has to specifically for each theory of recovery for which damages are sought, negligence of any and any other action. I mean, that's set out in 150B.
What do you think would be added to the expert report besides there was no work performed? I mean, my understanding of her allegations are that there was no work performed. The allegations are that a document was generated despite the fact that no examination of the home and no work was performed, correct?
Well,
so what would that, just help me, what would the expert report look like? When somebody says they're going to do an examination, they should do an examination and inspect the property?
Your Honor, the Texas Board of Civil Professional Engineers, American Society of Civil Engineers, provide for a level A inspection that does not require the engineer to travel to the property. He can do it based on notes taken by others. Now, in this case, we have a factual issue. He did travel. We're going to contend that he did travel to the property and did perform the report personally, but it is possible under the American Society of Civil Engineer Foundation guidelines that he did not have to travel to the property. So if she's alleging that he didn't act as a professional, I need to know specifically why, because he could have done this on basically an office review of the elevations and the measurements taken by others. Back to Murphy, I did not seek affirmative action or judgment on the merits. There's been no mediation in this case. The case has basically languished for 2 years with no action by any of the parties. There's no affirmative action to show waiver. There's been nothing other than the passage of time that I believe would show any waiver. The statute indicates that the certificate of merit should be filed with the original petition. Whether the objection is made a week later or 2 years later, I don't think that's important. The Sharp case out of Houston holds that it has to be with the original, the certificate of merit has to be filed with the original petition. And
your position is you can't waive it.
Well,
it's not waivable. Is that your position?
I think there's a number of courts that have said it could be waived. not the Texas Supreme Court, but Houston, Waco, Corpus Christi, and this court has said it could be waived. Nobody ever found waiver before the Murphy case. The statute doesn't have waiver in it, and I don't think it should be waived. I think Murphy should be isolated to the fact situation. That case was pending for 3.5 years. The certificate of merit was filed arguably 10 days late, 10 days after the original petition. Everybody was ready for trial, depositions taken, mediation, motions for summary judgment. But on the eve of trial, the defendant pops up and says, renews his argument on the certificate of merit, and this court said he waived it. But these other courts have said, although waiver is possible, they haven't found it. I don't think this case even comes anywhere close to the Murphy case in terms of the time elapsed and the efforts undertaken toward trial in this matter. No summary judgment, little discovery, no mediation. This case has just sat there for 2 years.
You sat there for 2 years. You didn't do anything. You didn't file a motion for summary judgment. You didn't file a motion to dismiss. You didn't. I mean, so I don't see that that's something we look at toward one side and not toward the other. I mean, your defense is that you did nothing.
Well, I mean, if there's a burden under the statute on me to file a prompt objection, a certificate of merit, then there should be a similar burden on the plaintiff to file a certificate of merit in the first case. And the legislature, each time they get a shot at this, have made 150 stronger, and I think they're trying to place the burden on the appellee to file the certificate and comply with the statute in the first place rather than on the engineer defendant to remember or find out that he has to file this motion and do it quickly, even though the case is just basically languishing. Example in Murphy, the case was pending for 3.5 years. In that case, the motion to dismiss was denied. Ustinick versus Nortex out of Waco, case was pending for 2 years, 5 months. Dismissal, the case, the court dismissed. Jernigan versus Langley was a medical malpractice case cited in the brief. The case sat for 600 days. The case was dismissed. TDI versus Citicorp from this court in 2011. There was no certificate of merit filed. The case was dismissed. Paladin, 2005 case from this court, no certificate of merit filed, and the case was dismissed. Your Honors, we haven't met the requirements of waiver. There's been no affirmative act. We haven't met the elements of Murphy, and I believe that the case should be dismissed in total because of the lack of certificate of merit. I would also point out to the court the changes in the in 150 dealing with subsection A in 2005. The legislature changed the first sentence. 1005.002A used to read, in any action or arbitration proceeding for damages arising out of the provision of professional services, they struck the phrase alleging professional negligence and made this a more universal dismissal. For these reasons, I'm asking the court to require a certificate of merit. I would point out to the court that to date, there has been no certificate of merit filed, so it's not a matter, as in most of these other court cases, where when the error was pointed out to the plaintiff, they acted to correct it. The error was pointed out, and it's never been corrected. It's going to put the burden on me to go out and take depositions of experts between now and the anticipated trial date, and that's an expense I don't think 150 intended to put on the defendant in these cases.
How would that be different if you had a report?
I would at least know why I'm deposing the expert and for what.
I think that's kind of obvious, isn't it? The lack of following up and coming out to the site and doing an inspection and preparing a report.
Well, I have somewhere here the responses to the request for disclosure. She's designated two experts and says, pardon my paraphrasing, but essentially they're going to testify about the quality of the engineering services.
I believe under one of the 190s, you can request the court to cause the expert to reduce their opinions to writing. Can you not?
Yes, Your Honor, I could.
Okay. I guess that would abrogate your fishing expedition-type deposition you indicated would need to be taken.
But I could also file under 150, which very plainly says she has to give it to me.
Right. Got it. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I guess there's an elephant in the room. The elephant being, how difficult can it be to get an expert report that says you have to go out?
Well, I guess that is kind of an elephant in the room, although our first argument, and when this case was originally filed, and we've been the same attorneys that have represented the same parties the entire way through the case. I actually did draft the original petition. Our allegation is, and always has been, even through the First Amendment petition, that these defendants, the engineer and his engineering company, did not ever provide professional services, could not have provided the services they claim to have provided in their expert reports. And so my thought and our argument is that this statute, this requiring a certificate of merit, does not apply at all. How can you have, what type of person do, I guess I need to get another engineer out there to say, well, this guy didn't provide any services, so he didn't provide services.
Didn't he provide a report? And, of course, you're taking issue that it's not this property, it's incorrect, he never came out. I mean, didn't he provide something?
All he did was apparently regenerate some reports that had data from other information, kind of a similar to a cut and paste type of thing.
But once he generated a report, it seems to me that therefore, he has provided professional services, and it's incumbent on you to, which may be very easy, to demonstrate that this does not meet the standard of care for this type of professional engineer, because it's cut and paste, or because he never came out, or it's information from a different site.
Yes. Well, I can see what you're saying, and a cut and paste type of thing, secretaries who don't have to be required to be licensed by the state of Texas. They're not considered professionals. They have to be certified or licensed through the state of Texas, which is what the statute applies to. And quite simply, the statute says, or just the first half of the sentence that's important here in subsection A says, in any action or arbitration proceedings for damages arising out of the provision of professional services by a licensed or registered professional. That's when it applies. Our argument is twofold. First of all, that he never did provide professional services. What he did had nothing to do with whether he's an engineer or not. If he sent a letter to somebody that had nothing to do with engineering services, you couldn't still claim that he was supposed to have, or I was supposed to have had some sort of certificate of merit, because that wouldn't even apply to his engineering services. It's similar in this case. But the second part of that is what's really important as well, is that it's an action or arbitration proceeding for damages arising out of the provision of the professional services. Our damages that were requested in this case by the plaintiff have always been against and almost solely out of what PermaPure Foundation Company did. Those are the damages sought. The damages they caused to the home when they, first of all, didn't provide the supplies and the right type of lumber and what have you that they agreed to by contract to do at the home. They never actually finished or corrected the foundation problems. There were a lot of other things they did. Part of their contract, part of PermaPure's contract that was direct with the plaintiff, was that they were to then also provide an initial and final engineering reports showing, first of all, what the variations were in the foundations and the work that was needed, why the work was being done, and then also a final report showing that the actual work that was done by PermaPure and its employees or independent contractors was actually corrective of the problem and was per the contract. So the damages that are actually being sought are damages arising from what PermaPeer and its employees did, but we've also added these in because that strings in and bootstraps in with a lot of the causes of action that we've brought against PermaPeer, as well as the engineer who was contracted or subcontracted by PermaPeer to actually do these things in the first place.
Is your point that your point can't be that you're not seeking damages from the engineer, or is that your point?
Essentially, yes. Most of the damages we've asked for that are in the petition are not arising out of what the engineer didn't do, because quite honestly, we've never alleged that the engineer did something negligent in this case. We're alleging he did nothing, and he couldn't possibly have provided services. But regardless of whether you think that this, or you find that the statute applies or not, the Certificate of Merit statute applies, even if it does apply, and even if we were somehow required by his letters that might be cut and paste, or who knows what they are and what they were based upon, even if we were required to somehow file a Certificate of Merit along with our original petition, over 2 years passed, or almost 2 years had passed by the time that they filed their motion to dismiss for failure to file this or obtain and file the Certificate of Merit. As you know, this, and he's raised it, and he's discussed a little bit, this court in Murphy versus Gutierrez, I believe that was in a 2012 case, found that in a similar case, somewhat similar case, that waiver can apply, and if you don't raise your issue timely, or if you don't raise it at a time before you've done all this other stuff in the case, that you can waive your right to insist on or seek dismissal pursuant to Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code Section 150.002.
Well, how would you compare the invocation of the judicial process in Murphy to what all had gone on here?
There are some differences for sure, but the way I would compare it is this. In Murphy, first of all, what happened in Murphy, simple, it was a pool was constructed. One of the defendants was an engineer who designed and, I guess, aided in the construction of the pool. There were defects with the pool. There was no allegation in that case ever that that engineer who aided in the design and construction of the pool actually didn't ever do any of that stuff.
I think what I'm getting at is discovery, depositions, the judicial litigation process.
Okay.
What had gone on here that you would compare to Murphy?
In our case, I think the facts have been a little bit misrepresented to you. This case, there's been a lot of discovery going on. His client was not necessarily involved in that discovery.
You and PermaPeer?
Yes, between me, my client, O'Connor, and PermaPeer. There have been numerous requests for production. I think at this point at least three. There have been interrogatories exchanged between the parties, requests for disclosures exchanged. There was a deposition of my client. They have also requested other depositions.
How much of that involved Chowdhury?
Not a whole lot of it. I mean, they always were aware of what discovery was going on, but those discovery requests and everything going back and forth were mainly between my client, O'Connor, and PermaPeer and their defendants.
Was their lawyer present at the depositions between you and PermaPeer?
Absolutely. They took place in his office, and he actually cross-examined my client, O'Connor, during the deposition.
What about PermaPeer? Did you say you had taken PermaPeer's representatives?
No. We have not taken their
fact witnesses. Have there been any depositions other than your client?
No. We've been trying to schedule the deposition of another fact witness who was the nephew of my client, who was at the home when PermaPeer first appeared to do work, because
so
there are fact issues relevant to that.
The bottom line is you filed a petition, the defendants answered, your client's been deposed, and there's been quite a bit of discovery between you and PermaPeer.
Yes.
That kind of sums up what's going on.
As well as during the case, we've always by agreement scheduled trial settings and then backed up the dates for any sort of deadlines for expert designations, expert witnesses.
How many trial settings have there been?
We now have, I believe our second trial setting is scheduled in December. Our first trial setting was for April. Another misrepresentation that was made earlier, and I think it was probably just inadvertent on his part, was that he said He had filed his motion to dismiss based on this statute well before trial. He actually filed his motion to dismiss on or right before the deadline for filing dispositive motions. He filed his motion to dismiss on February 22nd. Our original trial setting was for April 6th. When he filed that motion, we had not yet, by agreement, extended the trial deadline and all of the other deadlines that went along with that, including expert witnesses. But at the time he filed his motion to dismiss, based solely on this statute, all of the important deadlines had already passed. The discovery deadline had already passed. Expert witness designation deadlines had already passed.
Well, had there been any written or oral communications between the two of you about your report, like telling him it's my position, I don't owe you a report, or his calling you and asking you or writing you, where's my report, or something, anything?
The plaintiff made expert designations and filed those with the court. He never requested from me any explanation for that stuff. Permapeer's counsel did. Permapeer's counsel and I had a whole lot of conversations back and forth about that, of which he was copied on every single one.
But the answer is no. Y'all have never had
directly
a conversation about the failure by you, why or when or anything, about this report?
No.
To put him on notice, you know I'm not going to give you a report because it's my position. It doesn't have anything to do with help with provision of professional services.
Well, I think our experts, my position's never been that we'll not give you a report. We'll give you a report about what our experts' positions are. But those deadlines at that point had already passed. And so the salient position on the waiver issue was that there were a whole lot of things going on in this case, including the court ordered us to mediation pursuant, I guess, to the court's own internal scheduling issues right before trial. He did not mention that or talk about that, but that actually happened prior to the time he filed his motion to dismiss as well. And so that's another one of these six elements that the Murphy court addressed in the waiver issue, which is the participation in discovery, which is probably, you know, at least in this one, where most things happen. Whether a party sought affirmative action or judgment on the merits, he did actually, with his original answer, file a motion to abate, although that had nothing to do with the certificate of merit. And he didn't go forward on a hearing with that or anything. Then he filed his motion to dismiss just prior to trial, the original trial setting. Another third element or third consideration under waiver for the Murphy court was whether alternative dispute resolution has occurred. It has not actually occurred in the case, but it was ordered by the court that we attend mediation prior to trial. Because we, by agreement, moved the trial date to December of this year, we have not yet conducted mediation, but we have all agreed to schedule it so that it works for everybody.
You agreed to move the trial date?
Yes. We finally agreed to move the trial date after his motion to dismiss was filed, but not based upon his motion to dismiss. And the hearing on his motion to dismiss actually occurred after the original trial setting by a couple of weeks, I believe.
But your position is he could have filed this motion to dismiss with his answer.
Absolutely, and that's what the statute.
With your petition.
I could have filed, or his argument is I should have filed a certificate of merit with my original petition. The statute contemplates that in his original answer, he could have either said, hey, this should have been dismissed, like in the Murphy case. That's actually what they did in the Murphy case, was filed their original answer and a motion to dismiss. However, they never had any action on the motion to dismiss and never sought hearing on it until 3.5 years later into the litigation and prior to trial. And so that was one of the considerations, I believe, that this appellate court looked at when they made the decision in Murphy, that why didn't you insist on this? I mean, you conducted litigation for a period of 3.5 years in the Murphy case. They also talk about, in the Murphy case, the timing of seeking the dismissal, the elapsed time in the litigation, and then just the totality of the factors and circumstances. And I see my time is running out. Our only other argument that we were raising in the appellate court was that latches also applies in this case for similar reasons that waiver applies. But our conclusion essentially is that the trial court was correct in denying the motion to dismiss based on the certificate of merit statute, and that this appellate court, based on Murphy, Texas Supreme Court precedent with a couple of cases that have actually addressed this but didn't find waiver, not because waiver doesn't exist, but because the facts and circumstances and the record in those cases did not support waiver. And those cases actually talk about that. Our position is that this court should affirm the trial court's denial of the motion to dismiss.
In those other cases, unlike in Murphy, where they, your position in this case would be, this is worse than Murphy. At least in Murphy, they filed a motion to dismiss, and it was never done here. Right. What about in those other cases that I haven't read? Were there motions filed or just waited to the last minute and filed them, or do you remember?
There were some motions filed, I believe, three of them, and they're all the ones that he alluded to when he was answering your questions, and they're also in the in the opinion in the Murphy case. There's one called Ustanic, there's another one called Landreth, and then there's another one called Palladian. And in all three of those cases, they addressed whether waiver could occur in the context of this certificate of merit statute. They all held that the idea that a party could waive its right to seek dismissal can indeed occur, but in those three cases, each time they found that the record that the Court of Appeals had, either the clerk's record or the court reporter's record altogether, did not support all of the allegations that the parties were arguing, like the things they did with regard to participating in discovery and what they did during the lawsuit or during the pendency of the lawsuit. But in this case, the clerk's record actually does support what was happening during the pendency of this case. And those pages are, and the clerk's record are pages 159 through 199. And so there's actually evidence in our clerk's record of what was going on. But in those three cases where they said waiver could apply but was not supported, they said the clerk's records and the court reporter's records didn't support a finding of waiver.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I'm going to be devil's advocate for a minute.
Do that very well.
In Murphy, at least the other side knew what position that you would have been taking. That is, I filed a motion to dismiss because you haven't given me the report as required. In this case, you didn't file a report for quite a bit of time. So if it was her argument that you didn't provide any professional services, she could arguably believe you agreed with that.
Well,
and that's why you didn't file a motion to dismiss.
I did eventually file a motion to dismiss. I filed a general denial, denying these things.
If her position is Chowdhury did nothing, all Chowdhury has to do is say, yeah, I went out there and kicked some dirt around, and that's all I needed to do. Well, okay, you win, right?
Well,
If she
narrows her pleading, she,
if her position is he did nothing, not that what he did wasn't enough, wasn't good enough, wasn't well done, it was just he didn't go out there.
Well, I refer the court to her petition where she says that he didn't, the report he prepared does not meet the requirements of any reputable engineering performing an assessment, preparing an engineering report. I would read that to at least believe that my client's at risk, that she's going to come in and offer some testimony that he didn't act in a professional manner. Again, he could have acted in a professional manner and not have been out there, not have actually gone out there and kicked around the dirt. So it's a little bit different because of the requirements, the rules. But she says that she's not really aimed at Mr. Chowdhury, but her First Amendment petition alleges breach of contract against defendants. Doesn't say defendants Permapeer, says defendants. Negligence.
Did she have a contract with Chowdhury?
No, she did not.
Chowdhury? Sorry. Well, then that explains why she wouldn't allege a breach of contract action against him, right?
Well, she didn't exclude him. She didn't say the other defendant. The petition literally says says defendants, negligence and gross negligence, all defendants, fraud, all defendants, She has a paragraph that Chowdhury failed to perform any assessment in a professional manner as specified within the contract. Breach of express warranty, breach of implied warranty, civil conspiracy, deceptive trade practices. The only area that, there's only one area that she breaks out, and I didn't know which it is, but there is only one area that she specifically alleges PermaPure defendants. All other allegations are against all defendants. So if I'm going to be put to trial on this, I think I have to prepare for all of this. The trial setting,
well,
although
of course you would have sent out discovery, identify each and every fact supporting your assertion that my client contributed or participated in a civil conspiracy.
Well,
you know, come on.
I could have. And honestly, I didn't find the statute. I wasn't aware the statute was out there, but
we're not
the statute doesn't. The statute doesn't have a hole in it that says puts a burden on me. The amended scheduling order was actually entered by the court July 11th, but it was being circulated by counsel back in February before the motion to dismiss. I received a copy of it from Ms. Ardanowski. If there's been extensive discovery, it hasn't involved my client, and I have seen the responses to three requests for production, or seen that answers were given, but there's only been one deposition taken. I began to wonder after sitting here today if I've actually been included in all of this stuff. We did not participate in mediation. None of the parties went to mediation. Prior to the mediation, we were already working on rescheduling the trial. I don't think there's been any harm whatsoever to the plaintiff by the delay, and I think the statute, plain language, puts the burden on her. She didn't meet the burden. And although this court has found the one and only case, or written the only one and only case that made a found waiver, the facts aren't here, and I'm not sure the law is here on this case to do this. And I'm asking the court to grant the motion to dismiss, reverse the trial court.
All right, thank you. We appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business. We're going to be in recess until 3 o'clock. If you want to hang out and wait for the 3 o'clock docket, you're more than welcome to do so. But we'll be in recess.